I'll be right back. Just a second. I'm gonna close the door.
Granny, no. I'm podcasting.
I know what you're doing in there.
Okie dokie.
All right, here we go.
Another Thursday, another hour or so spent with PC Gamer and friends. This is episode 151 of our weekly podcast for October 2nd, 2008. Today, as our office slowly fills with poisonous gas, we'll spend our last words talking about Take-Two's free and clear of acquisition, for now, Left 4 Dead gets a blog, 48 days later, it'll release, Allstate wants you to save money on your auto insurance by playing games, achievements in PC games, yay or nay, gaming call signs, playlists, and more on the other side of these steel drums. I'm your podcast host, Evan Lottie, and I'm joined by reviews editor, Dan the Maverick Stapleton.
I guess I am technically more of a, well, whatever. Sure, I'll accept that label.
I mean, you don't have to provide any real proof, you just have to say that you are, right?
So, I guess that's true.
Okay, cool. And also by editor-in-chief, Kristen Salvatore.
I reject all labels.
Oh. How nonconformist. We're also joined by esteemed podcast producer, Andy Bauman.
As you'll note by my Twitter feed, I love Thursdays. Oh, is it because of the podcast? Definitely.
And, of course, by my personal co-op companion, intern, Andy Salisbury.
I can see Valve from my house.
Don't they have a restraining order that prevents you from looking into their windows with a telescope, Andy?
Well, technically it's 100 feet, so I'm loopholing it right about now.
They have nice offices, too.
They do.
Every time I go into their office, the first thing I do is kiss the life-size Gordon Freeman that's sitting in there, that's in their lobby.
And he says nothing.
Scratchy? What's that? Is his beard scratchy?
And he says nothing. He's silent.
Smooth as a baby's bottom. He doesn't say anything, but I think he likes to see me.
He actually, when I walked in, he's like, hey, tell Kristen I say hi. I was like, no problem, Gordon. Hey. And then I was like,
everybody knows Gordon.
And I turned around
talk.
And he was gone.
Yeah. And then he hit you with a crowbar. We should probably clarify that poisonous gas comment. I guess there's some construction going on in the building, and there were some people staining doors with, I guess, lacquering doors, and it got sucked into the air conditioning system. So like half the building had to get out of here because it was this a noxious odor in here. On the bright side, though, the inside of all of our noses and lungs now have a shiny new coat of lacquer.
It smelled like burning.
It's like they were, painting nail polish remover on the door or something.
It was very strong, noxious.
And apparently it was weaker here than the rest of the building.
Mm-hmm. The funny thing is that's the second time in like 3 months that's happened. Maybe not quite 3 months.
More like a year, but somebody was like spraying outside plant stuff on plants downstairs and like the whole building evacuated because we thought it was like a gas leak. But we'll do anything to get out of work around here.
Indeed. Well, in more notable news, I guess, other than our personal
respiratory well-being. Yes,
indeed. since we're all so interested in the economy of late, there wasn't too much notable news this week in PC gaming, unfortunately. But after all the hubbub this year, it's pretty much the big business story in gaming this year that Take-Two was about to be acquired by EA. A lot of analysts, including Michael Pachter, thought it was going to be a done deal.
Not Michael Pachter.
Yeah, he's the Pack Attack. He's crazy. But
Am I alone? Has anyone else heard of him?
Oh yeah.
No, I've heard of Michael Pachter.
Don't you read the news?
Yeah, I mean he's
definitely the most off-quoted analyst when it comes to video games.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Usually I don't.
The most off-quoted single analyst.
I guess I just don't retain the names of analysts.
I've talked to him.
Usually
it's
always analysts say,
Yeah. I've talked to him on the phone. We had him on the official Xbox Magazine podcast a while back, and he was just, dishing out his why and how he comes up with his numbers, and it was fairly interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I think I like the idea of calling him the Pack Attack from now on.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's pretty good.
I think he likes it, too.
That's pretty hot.
So anyway, the Pack Attack says...
I could call him right now. I still have his phone number saved.
Hey, Pack Attack.
What's up?
So you're wrong, huh? How does it feel to be wrong all the time?
No. We love Michael Pachter.
He's good. We do. Yeah. So anyway, what wrong thing did he say now?
No, I mean, originally he had said that it was a done deal, that Take-Two was going to be acquired by EA this year. And
well, that was wrong.
we already know that's fallen through, but just to update everybody, Take-Two announced today that they plan to remain independent until further notice, essentially, that all their discussions with various interested parties about acquisition have ended, according to Strauss Zelnick, their chairman. So we're just trying to gather some response about what this means for Take-Two and their games.
Well, their stock took a dive on the announcement of that, and probably again when everything exploded.
Yeah, everything took a dive. So
as of this morning, the stock dropped to $15.23. That's a 4% drop. And just to compare, that EA's original offer, their highest offer, was $26, which would be a 70% increase from what they have now. Seems pretty significant to me, but apparently they think they're stable enough and they have enough like creativity to maintain. But I don't know. I'm not sure if I'm especially pleased by it.
Well, I mean, it's always kind of bad to see. And you know, we talked about this when they were talking about the takeover. It's always kind of bad for gamers to see consolidation like that. I mean, there end up being probably less games produced. I mean, when Activision and Vivendi merged, you saw like several games getting cut loose because they wanted to streamline their operation a little bit. So if Take-Two and EA had merged, they would have done away with sports game, like 2K sports games probably, and probably several other games as well.
Right. I mean, I just feel like it's a different situation that how I respond to this news is different because BioWare got acquired, because the other companies you mentioned, like, just in the context of all the acquisition, we see less independence. And in that way, it's nice that they're going to hold on to their own properties and, hopefully maintain them in a good way. But it just seems like they turned down a really good offer, and EA is just going to end up coming back next year with a lower price for them.
Probably. I mean, that would be a wise move for EA if they're really interested. I mean, now that their stock is in the toilet, they can buy them for less than they would have paid this year, and it'll be an irresistible offer for the stockholders. So who knows?
Interesting little news story. I think Dan posted it to our delicious links for the podcast about Allstate rolling out this pilot program in Pennsylvania to.
I deny responsibility for this story.
Oh, I'm sorry. All right. It's pretty wacky. I don't know. It's really interesting. Essentially, Allstate, the insurance company, they're rolling out this pilot program to drivers age 50 to 75. There's 100,000 of them in Pennsylvania, and essentially they're giving them these PC very simple puzzle games to play and memory games to play, and they're comparing over time the accident rates of people that play those games to the accident rates of people that don't play those games. So it kind of led me to the question, like, other than just, I mean, the idea is that it improves, like, mental awareness.
Yeah, it's like brain age.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering if you guys had any other ideas for games that would improve driving skills and reduce accidents. Other than Race 2.
Not GTA.
Yeah, not sure. Driving games.
Whenever I play a driving game, I never want to do that right before I'm going to drive anymore because... Like, I get in traffic, I'm like, and, it's not something I would ever actually do, but I think, my first thought is like, oh, this guy's in my way, I'll just nudge him out of the way.
Although, I don't know, this happened like over a year ago, but I had gone out with a bunch of people to that go-kart racer. There's this thing down 101 called go-kart racer, and it's actually these full-powered, high-powered go-karts that are not on like a trail. It's not like the Malibu Grand Prix. Mm-hmm. Then you're on this, like, it's a pretty hardcore track. And so the first heat I did against the other, like, eight people I was with, I came in last. And then I sort of was like, wait a minute, I've played tons of Need for Speed. Like, what do I need to do? And I completely remembered, like, how to drift and, like, how to, brake before the turn and then accelerate through the turn. And I whooped everybody's butt for the rest of the day. And it was absolutely 100% because I remembered the mechanics from playing a driving game.
Well, Dan Morris used to credit playing driving games with saving his life because he was almost in a traffic accident, but he remembered how to maneuver based on, I think it was like a slick road situation. He remembered how to compensate for it based on playing racing games.
Yeah, I mean, I think all of us secretly hope that there's a situation where we have to use the e-brake and it just turns into this crazy, like, donut situation. Like, it's just like, man, if I hadn't played Grid or Gran Turismo, like, I wouldn't have known and saved my life. Totally.
I live in Washington. Except, I know a lot about slick roads and driving. Yeah.
Except if we actually tried those e-bake maneuvers, our Honda Civics would explode.
Oh, right. They would, but we'd survive, hopefully. I've kind of developed some weird driving habits. I have, like, whenever I'm on the highway, like, I don't know, it's pretty lame, but I try to slipstream behind trucks. Like, if you're not familiar with the concept, it's like the idea that the trucks, like, they're longer, so they create this, like, vacuum, like, sort of.
Yeah, it's a draft. Right.
Yeah. So you're sort of
known as drafting.
Yeah, you're limiting your gas consumption and stuff. I don't know.
It reduces your wind resistance because you're behind they're breaking the wind resistance for you.
So right, you're just shaking behind them.
And actually, if you're going fast enough, like, if somehow if you maintain, I'm not really sure of the technique, like, you can sort of, like, slingshot yourself around the car, I guess. I don't know how it works, the physics. No, stuff,
that's actually from Star Trek 4, where they slingshot the Earth right around the sun and travel back in time.
Okay, I'm just
I can see how you confuse those two things.
I do watch too much Star Trek. Okay,
it's a shake and bake.
All right, I'm sorry. I'm from Detroit, so I have to sort of rep my car knowledge as much as possible, even though it's not very competent. Anywho,
says the man with the tom-tom.
Oh gosh, and it's funny. Okay, this is another game related thing. Okay, so tom-tom, it's like a GPS system. I always have to set it to talk in a British voice because of all the games that have, like, female computer voices that are usually British. Like, it's just more natural and comforting to me to be talked to and told what to do by a British voice. I don't know.
You know, it's really amusing that to me that like GPS has kind of realized the concept of the mini map in your car. It's like games were doing this years ago. I mean, there was a mini map that showed you where to go, but now it's in your car, it's in the real world. It's one of those rare things that happens in games and then happens in the real world.
Yeah, and you can just add objectives on the map and it tells you where to go to your quests and stuff. Yeah. One game we're absolutely looking forward to is Left 4 Dead. It's set to be released on November 19th, and there's not too much to say about it other than we just thought we'd mention that Left 4 Dead, they started a blog. You can view it at l4d.com/blog. And I don't know, just I've really been interested in the Team Fortress blog that they started earlier this year. Even if their updates are pretty infrequent, like it's just good. They show concept art there. There's a recent update on the Team Fortress blog about the demo class and how they designed it from scratch and like all the different iterations. It just really gives you good insight into their development process. And I'm really hoping that, you know, there's a similar situation with this blog.
I hope every post is just brain.
Wow.
Do they plan on nerfing the demo class? Is that a blog post?
Oh, not that I know of.
Nerf.
I expect it to be the next character update, but I'm not sure. Otherwise, that Left 4 Dead pre-orders have actually, their quote, more than 40% of Orange Box was last year, which is pretty
That's
significant.
Impressive, yeah.
Considering how well that game was received on console and on PC, and what a value it was, so.
Yeah.
Pretty exciting. All right, so seeing as this week's news was a little bit on the slim side, I thought I'd conjured up a few open-ended topics for our podcasters. Seeing as our conversation last week on our least favorite game enemies spawned some neat little tangents. And the first one I wanted to pose to everybody was with Xbox Live and with PlayStation 3 now rolling out this trophy system that's really antiquated and kind of awful. We're starting to see a precedent set for achievements in games. Team Fortress 2 already has it. It leads to unlockables. And in a way, games like the Rainbow Six series and Call of Duty 4 have already rolled out sort of similar systems for unlocking clothing and equipment and whatnot. But I just want to get your guys' perspective on basically yay or nay on achievements for PC games. For me, it's kind of a difficult situation because we don't have an integrated platform that's like Xbox Live that, you know, just carries achievements across the whole platform and it's uniform.
Well, it's not across the whole platform, but we do have Live or Windows.
And
like, for example, Fallout 3 is going to have achievements through Live for Windows.
Right.
And that's like the whole reason it uses Live. It's not multiplayer at all, but it hooks into the Live service so that you can use those.
Fantastic. Yeah, and that's actually part of my point because we have Steam, because we have games for Windows. If, for example, Fallout is released on two or more platforms, like, Are you going to have achievements on Steam? Like, just the idea that achievements are not universal, that you have, like
it is, by the way, being released across all three major platforms.
So. Right. So just the idea that because we don't have a unified system, like having different friends lists, having different leaderboards and achievements, like, it's very incongruent, and I just want to get your guys' thoughts on if it's a good idea to... I mean, for example, Blizzard recently announced this year, I think, that they plan to roll out achievements for all their games individually, all their future games.
Right. And it is not quite as nice in that you don't have one central place where you can see the achievements for, you know, everything you've done. It's a little bit less of a trophy gallery kind of thing where you can, kind of brag. But the thing that a lot of people seem to like about achievements is that it gives them a reason to go back and play a game just so they can earn the achievement. A lot of people do it for the gamer score too, which, whatever. But
I think it's fun little goals to shoot for, personally. Like,
it does extend the life of a game because there's more you can do in it. I mean, you can go back in and shoot for killing every guy with a headshot. The thing that annoys me about achievements, though, is the really stupid ones. Like, there was one in Mercenaries 2 where it's like earn $1 billion. and that like, when I finished the game, I had like 150 million. And that was more money than I could possibly spend in that game. So the point of earning $1 billion is just to get that achievement, and you just have to grind to get there.
I have a question. Are you actually playing the game with the achievements in mind, or are you just sort of, as you go through and something happens and an achievement pops up, you're like, oh, I got that. Like, are you actually playing to the achievement?
Generally, no. When I play, I see it kind of as a reflection of how I play. It says, you did this, okay, that means that's the kind of player I am.
Right.
The idea of grinding to get an achievement that says you got $1 billion is kind of obnoxious to me. I don't see that as adding a whole lot of value to a game when it's not something I would do for fun.
Kristen's actually, I mean, she's asking a pretty core question to me. Like, for me, when I was a freelancer and I had all these games to play pretty much every week, achievements were cool. Like, they kept experiences fresh because I could kind of brag my friends I had this huge gamer score just because I had played games. But, I mean, now that I'm not in that position anymore, I kind of have a negative feeling about achievements just because they really limit immersion in games for me. Like, if I'm in a horror game and I'm crawling down a corridor and this little icon pops up to let me know that, I've completed chapter 4, I've killed X many enemies, like, that it bothers me that there's a real-world context integrated into the game that I can't escape, like, especially, heavily atmospheric games like Bioshock, like Portal, like Half-Life, like, a lot of the, one of the reasons I play games is to be insulated from the real world, like, just feel, have a contained experience that I have ownership of, that I can, like, feel emotionally immersed in, and having, even just knowing that, for example, that my friends or, the people on my friends list are going to be aware of how well I've done in the game, like, that's making a private experience, that's publicizing it. And I really have a negative response to that, especially on the PC platform where it's not an integrated, streamlined situation.
So I think
we actually agree. Like, one of the reasons that I rarely log on to Xbox Live when I play it on my 360 is for that reason exactly. I don't necessarily want everybody to know when I'm getting online. I don't necessarily want everybody to know what game I'm playing or how long I've been playing it. And it's even, obviously you can play, like Steam comes to mind, you can obviously play the games without, you can play offline or you can, I don't know, there's ways to hide what you're doing or where you are. Mm-hmm. But I would tend to agree, playing games for me is a very private experience. It's probably the same reason that I don't really like playing multiplayer games. Like, it's very much a solo, private thing. And I don't want everybody else necessarily to know what I've been up to. Now, as for the achievements popping up in the game, I completely understand what you're saying about the immersive experience being sucked away. But I have to say, like, and maybe this is just because I like getting gold stars, that doesn't actually bother me so much. I like for myself earning the achievements. I just don't necessarily want to share it with everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, I like so many things pop up on screens anyway. It's like that doesn't really bother me, unless it's a game like I don't know, Bioshock or or you know, Dead Space, where there's minimal interface and they don't pop things up on screen and they're really trying to immerse you. In that case, yes, it would be very out of context for it to pop up and say you won a gold star, or a purple heart.
Do we know if there's an option to turn them off in BioShock or in any of those atmospheric games? I honestly don't know.
Never played them on console, so I don't know.
Definitely
not on console. You can't turn them off.
Right.
The interesting thing is that on Xbox you have your gamer score, and I don't really know how this works since I don't have an Xbox. But like that's what everybody seems to be going for, like the big gamer score, like who has the bigger gamer score. You know, and it turns into like this, you know, gamer score whore and all that stuff, you know.
Well, I mean, right, and it's people like renting games from a store and just playing a crappy game to get a gamer score.
And
it's
going to happen
for the game makers
on PC. Yeah, exactly. Like it's this brilliant way of Microsoft's part to like get everybody to try these games that have easy gamer scores. And I don't know, that doesn't happen on PC with Games for Windows Live, does it?
Like, not that I'm aware of. I mean, well, I mean, I know some people that are big, you know, gamer score whores that have played a game on Xbox and then will get the PC version to play it to add to their gamer score because you get duplicate gamer score for that.
I don't know. I'm gonna have to take the side of the achievements because, like, I really enjoy it because, yeah, like, there's the gamer scores and everything, but to be able to accumulate that little number and everything, like, I legitimately really enjoy it. It really came, like, with Armia 2, there's all those different achievements to kill, like, you know, 150 guys with this type of gun, and it got me going back through the game in different ways. And I thought it was really cool to, you know, have to go through force to use a shotgun or a submachine gun instead of a rifle or, you know, big heavy machine gun and stuff. On certain difficulties,
that kind of achievement, I can understand how that's cool.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's definitely a system where I think you have to take the good with the bad, you know? Because, I mean, sure, just like everything else, there's going to be good sides and there's going to be bad sides, and they're just going to have to coincide. And I don't know. I see what you guys are saying, but I don't think it's enough to really think, you know, achievements are bad and stuff.
Right. I think there is value to them. And like Sins of the Solar Empire even has it's got its own little achievement system in there, which will probably be integrated into Impulse at some point if it's not already. But I mean, it's kind of neat to see, oh, you've killed, you know, 300 pirate ships, or they've got an achievement in there called Space Ponies, which is just a random thing that you can search your planets for artifacts and stuff that give you bonuses, and one of them doesn't do anything, it's just Space Ponies. So,
well, here's thing that I found about achievements. Well, one thing I don't like about achievements is, say, in Rainbow Six Vegas 2, where they, like, limited all the guns you could use until you could unlock them by, like, doing, like, oh, you got a headshot, so here's 3 points. You hit someone through cover, here's 5 points. You hit them with a grenade. And it, like, broke everything down into these ridiculous categories. And you play through the whole game, okay, maybe I'm not, like, good enough at the game, but I didn't get enough points to unlock the weapon that I wanted to use.
Well, Andy, does that criticism apply to Team Fortress 2 as well?
Well, this is what I'm going to say. So I don't like achievements like that where it's like you just go through the game and you get points for doing what you're doing. Like, that's kind of pointless. And then they withhold weapons for you. But here's an example of achievement that I think was really, really good because, okay, so specifically in Half-Life 2 Episode 2, there's this achievement where you have to, like, get a hunter to kill itself. Or, you know, you look through the achievements and there's these, like, really weird ones, and one of them is get a hunter to kill itself with its little pins. And you're like, how the hell do I do that? And it gets you thinking, like, in creative ways to play the game. So what I ended up doing was you get the gravity gun, you get some sort of solid object, like a piece of wood or something, and it shoots its needles into it. The needles do its little charge thing. You fire the charge thing.
Fire it back.
Back at it, and it does the, like, vaporization thing when it goes off right next to the hunter. So it's like this really cool gameplay thing that you learn from kind of going through the achievements and saying, well, how am I going to do that? And I think, like, that got me really excited about these achievements. But I don't know, in Team Fortress 2, for example, you just kind of get achievements for killing, like, you do certain things so many times and you just get
it. It's like a numbers game, right?
Yeah, like, it's going to happen eventually. You don't really have to think about it. So I don't know. Those seem like just rewards for playing the game longer when you get the unlockables. Like,
isn't what's going on in Rainbow Six kind of the same thing? I mean,
that's why I don't really like it. It's like
you're earning those points the same way, and you're just by playing the game, right?
Right, but here's the thing: is that Team Fortress 2, I haven't had a chance to, like, use those weapons yet. But I had a chance to use the M8 in Rainbow Six Vegas 1, and I love that gun. I just love the way it works, like the sound and the visceralness of the of how it is. And then I couldn't use it in the second one. So I was like, ugh, thanks a lot.
In those games in particular, like, call me really protective, but what you're mentioning specifically is kind of, for me, when I play those games and Rainbow Six, like, when I have to unlock weapons like that, it's kind of a similar situation with some relationship that I have with a mini-map sometimes, where if it's a really, like, well-designed mini-map, I end up just looking at that instead of actually playing the game. I mean, it's the same situation with those unlockables for me, where I end up paying attention to, okay, I guess I want this sniper rifle, so I'm going to try and only get headshots, instead of just organically playing the game like I would, and, like, just encountering that experience in the way that's, like, personal and natural to me. I'm focused on these little arbitrary details, and that's frustrating me. Like, I don't want to have to worry about those things when it's so oddly constructed.
Yeah, I don't really... I kind of dislike the concept of unlockables as rewards for achievements. Because that does... And if you get a lazy developer, they will have you do something grindy for it. And I don't want to grind. I just want to play.
Yeah, grind. Boo. No grind.
Yeah. it's really just an artificial way of extending replay value. Like, they're just generally, like, gradually introducing features and content, so you don't have it all at once. It won't get old.
Such a console concept. You know what I mean? Like, making things arbitrarily harder.
Well, some PC games have done that too, but...
Yeah. I blame console.
Yeah, fair enough.
All right, well, that was some nice reflection. Thanks for your thoughts, guys. The other topic, and then the one that's actually very dear and near to my heart, I have this odd obsession with call signs. Every time I've created a new gamer profile, or when I was younger, I'd have different nicknames and stuff, I just always try to, like, put a ton of thought into, you know, what represents me in a game and what's fun and interesting, how I want to be seen. I mean, because in a lot of these shooters and RPGs and stuff, like, your name is as much your avatar as your character is. It's what presents you and what people call you, other than your real name in a lot of cases. So I was wondering, first of all, like, what's a memorable call sign that you guys had, or what's one that you identify with, or what one that you use do you use now?
Well, I always play as Lee Taxor 004.
Exactly. As many numbers and X's and, like, 420s you can put in your name.
420.
Yeah, my personal one that I've settled on lately, it's my World of Warcraft name, is Scarjonic, because Scarge, as you may or may not know, well, it's actually pronounced Scar, but the J is not silent to me, is a a monster in Unreal that's just, you know, all different kinds of badass. And then Onic is the last part of my favorite band's name, Semisonic. So, you know, I don't know, I think it's pretty good.
So it's like an amalgam. That's kind of your approach. Okay, that's interesting.
Yeah. Although at other times it was just Scarge 314. I'm not sure where the 314 came from, but, you know, I roll with it anyway.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. What about you, Dan?
I'm not really all that consistent. I really have no pattern. It kind of depends on the game.
Sure.
Like on Steam, I have, you know, my Nowhere Dan is the ID I use a lot of places, just, you know, a Beatles reference. But, I don't have any particular attachment to anyone.
Sure. All right. Andy Bauman, how about you?
Okay. So, I've mentioned this before, but, like, the first multiplayer game that I really, well, I mean, I played Doom 2 multiplayer, you know, dialing up and stuff, but you didn't really have to put in, like, a name. So the first game that I played a lot on was Quake 1, and I've used my same name since Quake 1, so I was, like, 11 or 12 when that came out, I think.
That's great, yeah.
And I was like, well, what's a good name? You know, because that's when everybody started, you'd start seeing the same people online, and you'd, like, form a little friendship group of people, and you're like, well, I gotta have a good name, you know? And I was like, well, if I shoot somebody, I get blood all over me, so I'm gonna be Bloody Man. And I thought that was, like, the most badass thing, and I've always just been like, you know what? That's my gamer name. Like, you can't take that away from me, damn it. So that's gonna be my thing probably forever.
We applaud your consistency.
It's fantastic. And if someone else has already taken it, just add a 666, and you're good.
I like how it's improperly capitalized.
Oh yeah, that was just, you know, add a little flavor. Do you remember? Oh, do you remember?
Not flavor. That's a typo.
Do you remember back in the days in Quake 1? I think it was Quake 1 where people started figuring out how to use ASCII codes to get like really crazy numbers and colorful
colors.
Things in their name. That was so badass. I remember my name was awesome back then. It was all like bloody, man, with like crazy characters and stuff. It was so rad.
It was all pink with hearts all over it.
Yeah, like it had the most ridiculous like
and ponies
things in it. It was so cool. Anyway.
Fantastic. Well, mine, at least for the past few years, it's kind of awkward, but there's a story behind it. There's this really old browser-based sort of MMO, like when I was in high school. I forget the name of it, but it was like basically you'd create like a rock band or a musician group and you sort of maintain things and you go to different clubs and earn money. If anybody remembers it, actually, like try and remind me of the name. But anyway, you had to create an artist, and for whatever reason, my artist name was Dr. Lobster, just because it seemed like a good rapper name. And eventually, like that kind of mutated into Doc Lobster, DOC Lobster, and I don't know, it's worked out pretty well for me. Kind of, my philosophy is like within your name, especially if you're playing shooters, you need to have something that people can call you really quickly, so people can just call me Doc. It's one syllable. Everybody knows who they're referring to. And I don't know where the lobster part came from, really. I had this giant flag in my room. It's just like a straight-up flag, and it has a picture of a lobster, and it says lobster under it that I found on eBay. And it's pretty wacky, but it's worked out pretty well, I guess.
Whenever I hear your name, I always very think nice. Griffin singing Rock Lobster.
Yeah, that's...
I was like, Doc Lobster!
That is the other part of it. People, like, probably one out of every three multiplayer matches, like, that'll get sung to me in some form. And it's pretty encouraging, but also kind of irritating. I don't like the B-52s.
But... Oh, that's a shame.
Now, yeah. Now, but now don't you have to change your name to Leviathan now, though?
You know, that was really a point of much contention internally with it. Like, that was really tough because Logan proposed this amazing name for me, Leviathan. That was like just a respelling of my name, and it felt so right. Yeah, an anagram. It felt so right, and it was just like I rolled with it for a few weeks, and I don't know. I might come back to it. It's just, I mean, what's the nickname within Leviathan? You just call people like Levi or.
Yeah.
Giant snake.
I remember I'd suggested that to you initially too, and it seems cool, but at the same time, like, yeah, well, it's really cool to those people that understand how he got the name. To everybody else, it's like, oh he's another guy.
He's a fat guy.
No, I'm still struggling with it, actually, so I'll work it out. All right. And what about yourself, Kristen? Do you have any wacky, crazy names to go by?
Yeah. I sometimes use an anagram of my name. Which is what my IM handle is, so I'm not going to say it here, but most often my call sign
is... Oh my god,
is,
it is!
You never noticed that?
I was always like, wow, those are...
What is that? Yeah.
That's confusing.
what was the anagram we found for you and that we ran? It was like a violent
overt,
sneeze.
Overt naval strike.
That's right.
Wow.
My name didn't have any. I was so sad.
But the one I use most often is one that I... started using when I worked for Maximum PC, and we used to play Quake against the guys who then were working for our website, which was called Daily Radar. And so what we would do is we would all work all day, and then this was when we were in our old building, and then Sean Downey, who was an editor there too, he and I would jump in the car and drive to the nearest 7-Eleven and buy snacks and Slurpees for everybody on the Max PC team, and we would come back and I would suck this Slurpee down, and then I would be like wired for sound, and so my call sign was Sugar High, which it still is.
Nice. Great story. That's very... Wow, that's really cool.
There you go.
I like Sugar Highs.
You know, there's a pretty big sugar crash after is the only problem.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, if you're playing like a Twitch-based game, you're just like, whoa!
Chris, you're doing it wrong. You just have to keep eating sugar.
That's how I do. I just stay up on the highs as long as possible.
And we got this big case of Life Water in here, which is great for that because it's all sugar.
It's all sugar.
Hey.
Is it Life Water or is it Vitamin Water?
It's Vitamin Water.
Oh, Vitamin Water, sorry. Yeah, they're equally horribly misnamed.
I was gonna say, is there any difference?
Well.
Watch, I'm going to get letters from the Life Water people now. Just what we need.
Hey,
got some questions, Andy?
Do we?
Do we?
Wow.
Hey,
PC Gamer Podcast. This is Cliff out here in Anaheim, California, also known as Deadshot on the TF2 servers. Hey, two quick Deadshot. Questions for you today. One, the Witcher Enhanced Edition was released last week. I'd love to get your feedback on that, what you guys think of all the new stuff that they added, as well as the new modules. And the second thing, Interplay has now risen again, and I'd love to hear what you guys have to think, have to say about that, their website, what some of their new prospects are, and the Fallout MMO. Thanks again for your time. Keep up the great work.
Okay, first thing about The Witcher Enhanced, I've got Deathlock's column right in front of me here that's talking about it. It is favorable. I won't spoil the whole column for you, but he's the only one among us who has played it, so we can't give you a lot of feedback on that yet. That one has been on my list of things to play for a while, though, because like once I heard the Enhanced Edition was coming out, I was like, why would I play the regular one? So I have it on my shelf waiting to be played, but now I've got too much other stuff to work on, so soon I'll be able to tell you.
Someone was talking about it in the comments, and I just left a comment that said, "The Witcher is fantastic. No ifs, ands, or buts. It's like a really awesome game."
Have you
game.
Played the enhanced version?
No, but I assume it's only better, and the other one
yeah,
was just
it is,
amazing.
It is an enhancement.
Yeah. So, I mean, get on that. Definitely. There's. I mean, you can't go wrong, I'm assuming. Like, what are they, right, you break the game? Like, no.
Right. If you have the Witcher, you know, the original version, you can actually download the patch. It's like a 2 gigabyte patch. Or if you don't have it,
I guess I could do that.
Yes, you can. If you don't have it, you can just go to the store or online and buy the enhanced edition. And they put out a new retail version.
Yeah.
What was the second part of that question?
Interplay.
Yes. Interplay.
Which I should add, is it interplay.com? Because interplay.org is, according to the internet, a system of ideas and practices that can help you reshape your life and your communities.
That's exciting.
You might not want to confuse them.
Yeah. Interplay, I'll believe it when I see it. because, I mean, they have been making a little bit of noise lately, but that company has such a history of not actually doing anything. They did recently hire one of
Chris
the original
Taylor.
Designers of Fallout. Not Chris yeah. Taylor.
Not Gas Powered Games,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah. This
the
guy
other
was one
Chris
of the original
Taylor.
Designers of Fallout. So they hired him. They had hired another designer from or another team member. I'm not sure if it was a designer or not from the original Fallout team. It's questionable still whether they will, you know, actually be able to put that together. And it's important to remember that Bethesda has veto rights over anything they do, because Bethesda owns the Fallout license now, and they've licensed back the rights to Fallout for MMO purposes to Interplay. So who knows if that will ever actually materialize.
Yeah, that's really a pretty goofy situation, isn't it? It's kind of like loaning your little brother money, and then you can't pay him back, and then he has to, like, tell you what to do.
Well, sort of. I mean, it's a little bit different than that. It's like I'll sell you my bike, but you have to let me use it to go to the
store.
Unless you say I can't use it. So yeah. that's kind of the arrangement there.
Yeah. Either way, I mean, the language they used to describe that Chris Taylor was hired was really vague. Like, they're saying that, well, we recently opened an office in Irvine, California, and there's additional. Yeah. And we're going to continue hiring people as development ramps up, whatever that means. So we have no idea how far along they are. They could still be drawing up concept art for all we know. And
they just seem to be selling off all of the stuff they own. I mean, they've sold off Fallout. They sold off Baldur's Gate. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, they just seem to be selling. Who knows if they'll actually put some of that capital that they made off of that, off of those deals to you know, towards the game. But,
well, that's what I was going to say is, obviously MMOs are not their core competency. They've never made one. So I would guess, I mean, it's, in some ways it actually makes me feel better to know that they may be trying to pull together the resources to do a good job with this, because it's going to break everybody's heart if it's a, you know, if it's a poorly executed game. Nobody wants to see that franchise attached to something cruddy.
Well, if it's a poorly executed game, Bethesda won't let it happen. That's the whole idea.
Yeah.
That's why they have veto rights. They can't do something that would muck up the franchise.
Okay, then. So briefly, what would you guys like to see in a Fallout MMO? I mean, what's the best case scenario that we could see?
Wow.
That's a toughie.
You know,
that's so hard to imagine.
Back in the day,
that would be an awesome MMO.
Yeah.
Because the world is so open wide. There are so many different groups, so many different. I mean, it's not like a bunch of alien races, I mean, but there are like the people in the vaults, there are raiders, there are slavers, there are people starting up new communities, a bunch of different towns. There are ghouls, there are super mutants. There are plenty of factions you could put together. Put together an MMO from, and the world is just so, it's familiar but been wiped clean, so you can really identify with it. By nuclear war, you can identify with the landmarks and everything. So and there's a whole lot of interesting, armor and weapons and it just has a lot of potential.
I like if they ended up making it, I'd like to see like some really explicit mechanics for like resource acquisition. Like I'd like to see a lot of focus on like the fact that resources are scarce and you have to really hold on to them. They're very valuable. Maybe even like some construction, because I know like you're sort of salvaging a lot of parts and building weapons, building vehicles, things like that. That'd be interesting. Yeah, but like very like even like if they had an interface that let you build different structures and tools, and I don't know.
I've always been kind of down on the idea of player like constructed housing ever since I played Galaxies, because that was just so messy, and like you. They had areas where there was a town and then you couldn't build anything in the town or the immediate surrounding area, and like once you crossed that line it was like this like town, like kind of shanty town that was just kind of ugly, and it was just kind of annoying. So I don't really like player housing in that method, at least.
Sure. Understandably, after that game, for sure. All right, Andy, got any good cues we can A?
Yeah. Hey, PC Gamer Podcast, this is George in Chicago, hoping you can settle some rumors regarding the upcoming Peggle MMO. Specifically, why can't we play as Bjorn? Is it true that the Magic Hat has been nerfed for PvP? And most importantly, what is the attraction of being able to port your WoW character over? I don't see why they're making such a big deal of that. Hope you can answer this. Love the podcast. Thanks.
Oh gosh, a Peggle MMO.
I love it.
Wow. I think it's obvious why you can't play as a unicorn. There can only be one. It's like the Highlander. You can't have 30,000 unicorns running around in MMO trying to hit all those orbs and get multipliers and extreme fever. And
it would be like having a bunch of Jedi in Star Wars Galaxy. There were only supposed to be like a couple Jedi in that period.
And wouldn't that be a shame?
So I guess it's all about continuity is what you're saying.
Absolutely. I mean, within Peggle, like, I know they're really protective of their lore. I just can't see that happening in an MMO. In that context, yeah, okay.
I was like, wow, how far can we hold this?
I'm really serious about it.
I could probably go further if I liked Peggle.
Oh.
Ouch, burn.
I don't dislike it. It's okay.
It just doesn't bring you the joy that it brings the other people in the world.
Not so much.
Let's do playlists. What have you guys been playing? Dan Stapleton, go.
Oh, see, what can I actually talk about that I've been playing? a bunch of stuff that I can't quite talk about yet.
I know what you're playing.
What can I talk about?
Baseball.
I guess I can talk about Dead Space. I've been playing some Dead Space.
Oh.
Which I'll just say it owes a lot to BioShock.
Hmm.
Okay. I think it's like the first like major like BioShock like inspired game that has come along. It's like very, it's post BioShock, put it that way.
Hmm. That's not bad. I don't mind some BioShock hat tipping. Yeah. It's fine.
It is not BioShock, but it is right. It is very post BioShock.
Mm-hmm. All right, Andy and Andy, what have you guys been up to, game wise?
Mr. Bauman, you go ahead and go first.
Well, I've finished Assassin's Creed and started Crisis Warhead. That's about it.
How do you liking Warhead?
Warhead is pretty rad. Like, it it caters to my play style a little bit better than the other one, maybe, because I just kind of go in and start like popping baddies as much as like coolest ways I can with the guns and stuff. And I'm really, really not that far into the game.
Mm.
It's been crashing too. I don't know.
Really?
What's up with that?
It was stable as can be for me.
Huh.
Yeah. Same for me, actually. I had a chance. I played through it twice. I liked it so much. And the first time I went through, it was just Rambo brute force. Let's, you know.
Yeah, because I did watch Rambo, and it inspired me a lot to play that
really?
Game. Because, dude, Rambo could have made some good damn use of that nano suit. I'll tell you that.
Yeah,
much.
All those times Rambo was cloaking, that was awesome.
Dude.
Andy, this might solve your could conceivably solve your problem. There were new NVIDIA drivers that came out like this past week. Did you get those?
I'm on top of that.
Then never mind.
But yeah, thanks for the
clearly
suggestion.
Not solve your problem.
No. I haven't installed them yet. I downloaded them like last night.
Oh,
so.
I see.
There you go.
Actually, and then the second time I went through it just as stealthily, if that's a word, as I could. And it actually was a lot of fun to be able to go through it like that, just, you know, cloaking as often as I can and taking my time. And I was playing it just on, not on the hardest, but the one just below that, I think just normal hard, not like elite or something.
Right. Delta.
Delta.
Delta, that's
it. It's really easy on hard, I noticed, though.
It's fun.
Yeah,
this
one is much easier than Crysis.
Yeah, it's super easy on hard. I'm just like going through slaughtering people in no time.
Yeah.
Awesome. All right. Speaking of no time, what I've been playing in like 6 seconds, Lego Batman, probably the best Lego game yet. Tons of TF2, Rock Band 2, and Peggle Knights. Very cool.
Kristen?
Oh, I've sort of had options paralysis. I finally got to play some Crisis Warhead yesterday, but as we were discussing this morning, I'm sort of crap at it, as I am crap at most of those games, but I'm going to keep playing it. It's hard, though, to keep playing something I'm not so great at when I've got Warhammer Online and Lego Batman and Civilization Colonization all sitting
Warhammer
on my desk
Online?
At the same time.
Warhammer Online is supposed to be fantastic.
I
want to
play Warhammer Online so bad.
I haven't even unwrapped the box yet because I'm afraid if I do, I'll just put everything else aside, and I really want to give some time to Crisis Warhead, so I'm going to plug away at that for a little while longer, but I'm pretty sure Warhammer Online is next on deck. So.
Duke Nukem 3D, Xbox Live, so good.
Weren't you speedrunning through it? Is that what
I did.
Understand?
I beat the first map in 44 seconds. It's on my Twitter.
All right.
We will be sure to hop on over there.
Follow us up on Twitter, everybody.
Well, as we take the final drag off another delicious but long-eroding podcast, we ease into the cough-filled weekend, our throats scarred but slightly comforted and eased by the reflections we've shared on the industry and the games it produces. But in the half-fortnight absence of our crack team of PC gaming experts, we welcome your questions for our upcoming podcasts. Send your questions to us in MP3 format to pcgamerpodcast@gmail.com or to call us toll-free at 877-404-1337, extension 724. You can also join our publications family by subscribing to PC Gamer Magazine. Head on over to gamesradar.com/PC and check the left side of the page for the subscribe button to subscribe to our magazine. For the PC Gamer podcast crew, this is Evan Lottie saying thanks for listening, and we're looking forward to circling our Sonic Wagons again next week.
Keep me off the podcast forever.
Logan.
Shut it, Logan.
Okay, I'm outie.
All right. Thank you.
Bye.
See ya.
Bye.
But our half-night absence of crack team. Oh my gosh, let me do that again. I forgot some modifiers. Okay. Wow.
That's me smoking the podcast.
Yeah, basically.
It's a bummer, man. It's a bummer.
Trying
just got real spicy.
It's already. Damn, we've been recording for 42 minutes already.
Are you serious?
Bleep, bleep. Gonna have to bleep those out, young man.
I want you guys to know that I'm sitting here cuddling the office's weighted companion cube.
Oh.
I want you to know.
Picks.
I'm
picks.
Still in my jammies. Is that a way to podcast or what?
I didn't want to know that.
Everybody did.
Is that why you had to close your door?
My jammies.
Oh, ew. Oh, no. Yucky.
Yeah.
Podcast foul.
That makes me a sad panda.
Pigment nicknames. A lot of people always end up calling me Panda because Andy Pandy then turns to Andy Panda, and it's like the worst nickname in the world.
Well, you will
you
always
know, it
be.
Been worse. It could have been worse. It turned into Andy Pansy.
That's true.
You will always be intern Andy to us.
You dodged a bullet there.
Someday I become editor in chief. It's like, hey, intern Andy. I'm like, damn it, that's not my name.
Just heading over to PC. Oh my gosh, how is that still there? Okay. I thought I pulled up the recent one. I'm so sorry. Okay.
Just head on over to.
Yeah.
Okay, so we got to do a rap shout out. Dude, this actually could be kind of fun. Like, at the end of each podcast, we do, like, a rap shout out.
We could, but.
And we have different people try and, like, you know, get their name in there and stuff. All right, man.
Should we preface it? Okay, let's intro this segment. This is a special segment on the podcast where if you PM me enough, you get a rap song made about you.
That's right.
Oh, boy.
Oh, man, you ready to lay? You ready? Andy B.
All right.
Andy B. Yo,
I'm on iPhone pads.
Lay down a fat track.
Go, like Andy, go.
Got this boy. Way up. No one up in the snow. I'm sure his jacket some girth. He has a cool name. Oh, it's not Wayne. It's straight Stealth Silver, and he's in the mod game. Sorry, SS. We know about y'all. We know you wanted a chance to talk. We know you wanted to call. Sadly, though, you beat up way past the border. Way up in the snowfall. That's right. You in Montreal. No, what's up, not the Buffalo. Hey, you is rad. Your messages be all up in Andy home. Oh, worst rap ever. Check it. PCG Pod represented.
I think it was like cutting over you or something.
Was it?
Yeah, I don't know if it was very good.
MC Frontalot, watch your back. Right, like right now? Or did you get it?
Do it again. Do some PCG podcast.
PCG podcast represent MC Frontalot, watch your back.
It's the most gangsta podcast.
Yep. Don't get any more street. Shoot.
We block out swear words. We so gangsta, we block them out with a bleep bleep.
Yeah, that was bleeped.